Hey, Brian.
Hey, Elliot.
What's the talk of the table?
This week, we are sitting down with Kieran Gillen. He is an award-winning comic book writer you may know from Once in Future, The Wicked and the Divine, and a number of Marvel projects, including Immortal X-Men. But if you're listening to this podcast, it's very likely that you know him best as the writer and creator of one of our very favorite tabletop role-playing games, Die. Kieran, welcome to the show. Great to have you here.
Welcome.
Lovely to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
We met a couple of months ago now when we produced our Die actual play series for My First Dungeon. And little did we know how much fun we would have with that game and how much that game would mean for like My First Dungeon and the production that we do. But coming out of that, there have been so many other people who have been latching on to this game, whether through actual plays or just through kind of playing it at their tables. How does it feel to be kind of like a number of months removed from the release and see such a positive like swell of a community building around this game?
Oh, I hate it. I wanted to crash and burn and no one... No, seriously, it's obviously a delight. Like, you put a game out into the world and you kind of... I mean, how many unplayed games do I have on my shelves? Mm-hmm. You know, not even like bad games, games I'd love. I've never managed to get to the table. And to see like people take stuff that we've created and then make it their own, that means a lot, you know? And I mean, relevantly, the actual play community has done amazing stuff with Die. And I'm sort of, as maybe sort of chew over why people seem to like it in the actual play community a bit, because it's not a game I designed for actual play, but at the same time I can sort of see meaty stuff that's useful to people, you know. And it's fun, you know, it's all fun in the, even the bad stuff is fun, like answering the same question a million times on the Discord is kind of fun. Like it's teaching me what's not clear, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like it's all kind of like it's out my hands, and that's kind of what RPGs are, you know. So yeah, it means a lot.
It is very cool to see, to be a, like a small part of like the see at the start of it and see where it's at now and like be excited about where it's going. And kind of on the subject of where it's going, you and Roanrick and Deckard are releasing in the very near future Die Scenarios. Can you tell us a little bit about what those are and what the plan around those was when you decided to bring these into the world?
Right, there's these scenarios, you know, and they're for Die. It's like galaxy brain stuff. Really, it's kind of, we wanted to have something that was out relatively quickly. Like, we've got plans for bigger books, but like, you know, that's down the line. You actually kind of want something to the community to pick over and play with, and like, especially because we felt that was unfinished business might be a way of phrasing it. That's not probably right way of phrasing it, but the idea of like, in the actual manual, we have these pre-generated scenarios, and the scenarios are kind of showing you, you can do this, you know? So it's not just you're meant to run them, which of course is also what they're for, but they're also, how about doing it like this or like this? And we talk about in the running die section about various ways to generate the world, and many adventures are expansions of that. And that's kind of what in some way what Die Scenario is. It's like, here is each of these issues is going to give you a sort of, probably sort of loosely themed set of adventures. And they'll give you a hard dive onto a different way of looking at Die. As in, here's a different sort of game mode. And like, yeah, run this out the box, have a lot of fun with it, but also pick it apart from parts. Because, you know, that's what a lot of people do with adventures anyway. They take an adventure and steal the good bit.
Right.
You know, or, or not good bit singular, but, you know, always looking at stuff. So it's both, adventures are both adventures in RPGs, but they're also examples. And I find that really exciting. So plan is to do four of them. I mean, four of them is the initial plan. Each one is free in, and the first one is called Bizarre Love Triangles, which is out at a point in the future. Does that answer the question? That's, you know,
yeah, no, that's great.
I could certainly dig into more.
It's interesting. We had this conversation with Haunted Table Games, who are the folks who ran the Triangle Agency Kickstarter earlier this year, and how one of the things that they really thought about in releasing the game is this vault extra book of adventures that they created, because they wanted to create that promise to the community that like, hey, this game is going to be around and there's going to be stuff within it for you to engage with long term. You know, you're going to be able to keep making friends around it. You're going to be able to keep running games. And I'm wondering, like, with this scenario thing, obviously there's a lot of interesting stuff from a design perspective and like new ways to explore, but I wonder how much community was kind of top of mind for you and Roanrick and Deckard, which I think you mentioned a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely like empowering the community is on my mind always in this kind of like, that's what at least what the, that's one reason why I'm on the Discord as much as I am, because it's like, I'm simultaneously giving, this is our best advice, which you put in the manual, but at the same time, I'm trying to step back and kind of you're also allowed to ignore that. I mean, you don't even need me to tell you that you can ignore that, because that's literally what RPGs do. So it's partially that. And it's definitely like, I like engendering community. It's like, I don't even think much about forcing that. Mm. It's one of these things that almost going to die, I kind of, one of the things me and Grant were talking about is quite a lot of people play one RPG once, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. So at least so much of Die is making sure the first experience of Die you had is as good as possible, because it may be the only one, you know?
Right.
That, you know, which isn't a problem. No. So there's definitely kind of that there, as in that's for me is the thing that I think about. And of course, the irony there is if you actually really think about what that first hit feels like, you're really making people come back for a second hit.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's like you don't, it's obviously don't aim to make people stick around. It's just kind of a nice side effect of trying to hit something as hard as we can.
Right.
And then it's kind of like, so much about Die is the playfulness of it. And like the exploration of it. So by writing the scenarios, there's the kind of, here's something else to play, which is radically different. It also is kind of a really good way of showing other bits of the game, as in by the nature of the RPG manual, like the first 110 pages, like the character classes, like we take a classic structure and then really then you hit rituals. And rituals is kind of how the game works. And there's persona gen and how the real, but Die is persona gen. You know, that stuff is the most important stuff to Die, and the rest is kind of stuff you plug into it. Like, you don't have all the character class rules, but you have all the persona rules. So at least one of the really cool things I think Die Scenarios does is really shows you how to run scenarios, as in really tells you how to make a persona group, because that's where the meat is. And you see stuff that in various people in the actual plays. Like, if you twist what the persona group is, it changes the game dramatically.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if... that's all the way through Die. Like, if we do a game set in an old people's home, that's going to be different. And that's part for me, a huge part of Die was the people you plug in are the variables which changes the equation. Like, Die is a pretty, has solid structural elements, which I recommend using. But like, if you, just by changing the people, you completely different game. And therefore, by doing these sort of scenarios, you're kind of like giving different sorts of people, allowing these personas to generate, you know, and having fun with it, I guess. You know, I guess that's one of the things. Like, especially we're thinking about stuff to do at events at the moment. Like, we've got some weird panels and we've got a 36-player game you want to run at Dragon Meet and stuff like that. You know what I mean?
Wild.
It's going to be good. It's that kind of, when you have a stage, I think it's kind of fun to have a bit of fun with it.
Yeah.
And that makes people want to be part of it. You know, and that's kind of, because I'm really talking a lot here, but one of the things me and Grant were talking about early on when sort of doing the initial planning was, the classic way you make an RPG manual is you put the stats for all the characters in, like, oh, here's your stats for various, and we do maps and all that kind of, which is a good way of doing a game. But that's not what Die is about. Die is all about empowering the players.
Mm.
And that's kind of like, and just by doing stuff, you give players permission to do stuff. You know, as in, this is possible. This rule can be set on fire.
Right.
You know. So yeah, does that answer the question? That's like, I've talked around a bunch.
No, it does. And I'm struck by something you said there about how the persona generation is Die. And it reminds me of some conversations we've had with Jay Dragon, the designer of Wander Home, Yuzeba's Bed and Breakfast, and the like. When we did our Wander Home season and we did the actual play episode, we ended up not engaging with the token mechanic really at all. But what Jay talks about in some really great articles about game design is this idea of systems of relation, that like that is also part of the game, whether you're engaging with the tokens or the dice or whatever. It's that, you know, if you've made a character for Wander Home, you've created those systems of relation that like no matter what you do after that, you're playing Wander Home in some way. And same with Die. Like if you go through this persona generation process and then you go grab a, you know, D&D first edition adventure and run it with the Die personas, like you're still playing Die and it still has that like Die core to it. I don't really have a question there, but like I thought it was interesting.
Jay's an amazing designer. In fact, I went to Gen Con for the first time since then, and I met Jay, which was really nice because Wander Home is obviously amazing. But yeah, like something I do when running like even classic, in fact, if you ever think about this as proto Die, it's like when I was running like one off, there's a period in the mid 2010s when a lot of people asked me, hey Kieran, what's an RPG, can you run one for me?
Mm.
You know, and I was sort of like rented out to various groups of friends to run something, and one of the earliest ones I did was just, it was like a classic RPG adventure for a game called Dragon Warriors, which is a UK game from the 80s, and I was like, oh, it needs to be a bit more meat, and I just used sort of a fiasco persona gen to make a relationship in the group, so all the play, well, suddenly you're not just like playing a class, you're playing a person. The second you have a person to hold on to, the whole game changes. Like you realize, oh, no, I'm this person, therefore my choices now have meaning, you know? Or I've got a magnetic north, You know, that's one of the things, like, DICE sounds like it's going to be really meta, and obviously it is. But, like, the unalienation of it is quite important. As in, oh, I know what someone who's depressed in their marriage feels like. You know, I'm, you know, not actually me, but you know, right. I mean, I know what the idea. It's easy to think about how, what would that person do if dropped into a fantasy world? It's you know, it's meta, but it's also quite relatable, I think.
Mm. On the subject of Gen Con and why DAI, why I think DAI has become, like, so popular is that this was also my first Gen Con recently in, like, I went as a small child, but I went back for the first time with Elliot and Behold, our resident musician, and another friend. And I got to run a game of DAI for Roan, Rick, and Deckard at, like, and I've to that point, I had never run a game for strangers. Like,
oh, wow.
In a, like, I'd done it, you know, for a podcast, but, like, there's kind of a different thing for that. I've never sat down at a table with total strangers, had them come up and, like, played a game. And it was, I was, like, really nervous going in, but as people sat down and started doing the rituals and, like, going through and building their characters, it's amazing how much of the lift the game kind of just does for you. And, like, by the end of that ritual section, you know, after an hour of talking about characters, all of the story building blocks were already laid out for me. I just had to press 1, 2, 3, 4 in order, and we got to tell a great story.
We're a gang, you know. I mean, this is like, the thing about Persona Gen and RPGs generally, I always describe it like forming a band. But so much Persona Gen is the way it works is kind of like, okay, we're going to create. That's why I try. One of the things I say a lot in the Discord is, please, not please, but I recommend you do the first the Persona Gen together. Because, you know, the classic RPG things, do things separately. And it's like, no, do it together. Instantly you're bonding. And that's the thing. At the end of that hour, not only you've made people, you've sort of hate each other a bit or love each other a bit.
Yeah.
And you form this gang. At the end of the hour, you know each other, and also you know the characters. And it's in the same way you're kind of invested in your friends in the real world, you're sort of invested in these imaginary people because you were there when they appeared. You know, they're your kids too in some way. You're like a weird gaming uncle or aunt or whatever. So yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, I'm petrified when I run for strangers. I immediately sort of turn into character. It's like, in fact, I'm doing it now. Like, I'm in character a bit. You know, sure. Like when I'm forced to perform in public, I've got to, like, heighten myself a bit. But, like, it's interesting. And it's something really, like, if I ever do a DAI sequel to the comic, I think it's going to be about pickup groups.
Oh,
you know,
fun.
People you have, as opposed to people who knew each other, people who discover each other in the game, you know? And that's a very different dynamic to friends playing together.
Yeah. There's a lot of discovery in, like, a pickup group where, like, you sit down, an immediate thought about the players around you. And then especially with this game, as you go through character creation and people are really like, people are asking, hey, can I like hate your character? And like, you know, can we have these kind of fraught relationships because the game rewards it. Like you learn a lot about these 5 or 6 people around your table very quickly in a way that other games, when you're just like, okay, roll for your stats. And are you an archer? Are you a fighter? Don't quite give you, or at least aren't out of the box designed that way.
I'm glad it works because it's like definitely it's what I love about it. You know, it's just the real magic of making people up. And it's like, I love like for the Queen, that's a big influence on DAI. Mm-hmm. I think quite late influence, but like for the Queen really clarified in terms of how you could create a world just from questions and implication.
Mm.
You know, and obviously that was very influenced by The Beast, the previous game, or not Alex's previous game, but the earlier game.
So I want to go back to kind of the getting into the scenarios and getting into a little bit more detail on this. You mentioned that there are things, not holes in the original game, but unexplored bits of the original game that you're wanting to explore in these scenarios. So I know that, like, coming up in the first one of the ones that I've heard you talk about is the X-Crawl, for example, where you're going after a Hex-Crawl sort of style adventure.
We love a pun.
We
simply love a pun.
What are you getting to explore from a design perspective that you didn't get to explore in the original book, and like from a like play experience goal perspective with these first sets?
My main aim with X-Crawl is to make Zach from RRD cry, because Zach really doesn't like puns. So like my whole existence is to really kind of make them kind of feel awful. Sorry, Zach. one of the things that's in DAI, but like I got given the challenge from Grant. I've mentioned Grant 3 times without insulting him. That feels weird.
You can get a jab in there right now if you want.
He's lovely. Why would I do that? I'll do one later. I do like the October is the time for emotional sincerity. That's my new thing.
Mm.
One of the things we tried to do, because the challenge was, is it possible to do a classic pre-gen for DAI? Because all the adventures are in some ways structured improv. Like Conquest, which you probably ran at the Gen Con, Brian. Like, Conquest is basically you make up the people, you use the corner as a map, you choose one place in the corners where you've got to get to, and then use whatever's at the corners, your improvised stuff, you know, and that's doable. That's not a hard improv exercise, I think. I think that's pretty robust. And also, especially because if your time's small enough, it's always easy to just use it as a setting. But at the same time, something that's a bit more, rather than you thinking, okay, what would really torment somebody who had lost their puppy and then, you know, got very much into Tolkien elves or something, you know what I mean? As opposed to making up an encounter on the spot and using it as an improv palette, is there a way of doing a pre-generated adventure which you can plug in encounters? You know, and also you can sell, okay, cynically, you can sell them, you know what
sure.
I mean? A proper pre-gen is much more sellable than an improv pre-gen. So the first attempt at doing that really was Total Party Kill, which is in the manual. Mm-hmm. And expressly, here's a dungeon. Here's explicitly how you make the dungeon. Here's explicitly set encounters along the way. And the way that works mainly for space is the set encounters are all the same for each player. Mm-hmm. As in, they've all got a bad relationship with the GM. And you ask, who has hurt you in your life? And who have you hurt in your life? And that person will confront you. And it's not really a very detailed encounter because it's quite a short thing. But like, there's enough there to actually run out of the box in a quite intense way. Mm. And the thing I learned from doing that was, A, I need more words. Mm-hmm. And B, it's about editing the persona questions. Because mm-hmm. the way Persona Gen works is, it's already like, if you just... Because originally Die worked with completely improv. So like, I just started, hey, we're a group of people who played D&D, or sorry, an RPG together. Who are we? And nothing. Not like we're old friends at school. Nothing. And then I kind of, at the end of the persona gen, I went away from the table and then worked out what the hell, what world could they go to? Every single time. So it's panic for like 10 minutes. And I was just, there's no way I could sell that game.
Right.
Because that's literally like, here you go, jump off a cliff, hope you're okay. But I hit one game, which was kind of, the players were great, but their answers were kind of, I'm going to use the word boring. I don't mean boring, but I mean like safe. Not going for it. Like, they weren't like, the players weren't a band, or they used to be children in a cult. They had no really big hook. They were just a group of like people who used to play games together. And I went, what can I do? And then I immediately thought, I could send them to old teenage fantasy RPG world. That would work. And then I realized instantly that would work for everybody. You know, all I need to do is narrow the group to, you play the game together, and then you go to that world. That's it. And that's so everything else other than that became like add-ons to the core game. So I knew that early on. But the more you went on, I realized the more you narrow it, the more you can get really specific stuff in the world. So obviously Conquest is set a card and all those kind of ways. But the way that a Total Party Kill works by, you had a bad relationship with the GM. And the specific questions of Persona Gen, which define your bad relationship, so that can then be used in the adventure. And the way Bizarre Love Triangles works is, it's that taken to the full game. So the way the hex crawl works, it's a set structure. It's not like hex crawl is basically an environmental dungeon.
Right.
So there's an encounter in each one of these regions. the way the Persona Gen is narrowed even more, it allows you to take those specific questions and have them play out in the game.
Mm.
And then you can run out the box quite easily. And which works well if you're running out of the box, but it also gives you really specific examples of how you make a dying, or how you can make a dying encounter.
Right.
I mean, to get specific, like Die Hex, Bizarre Love Triangles. It's Love Triangles because the hex map is not hexes, it's the die D20.
Right.
So there's 20 regions.
Love it.
Of course it is. Why would it, you know, obviously I would do that. and it's the joke becomes they're all people who are obsessed over an ex they used to go out with. So it's a group of people who basically hang out and probably drink, but it doesn't have to be drink, and whine about their partners. And the GM is the person who just is sick of this. Please, can we stop talking about these people for once? Let's play a game. And of course, there's more than that, but that's the kind of setup. And the way that works, this is something we did in the other adventures as well. We have firm archetypes for these six players. Mm-hmm. And it's like they have different kind of breakups, or like one of them was left, one of them left somebody else, somebody broke a lot of people's hearts, you know, for one reason or another, somebody was in a controlling relationship, but you know, these are iconic reasons that people, oh yeah, the other one's unrequited. So each one of those maps for a character class, but also so you get to ask, let's start with the easy one, the fool. The fall is the fickle, And it's like, why did you leave people? You know, why do you leave? You got options like, you know, the spark just goes, or I see somebody and, you know, they weren't the one. I believe the one is out there, you know, and they're very different. And you make it, you know, so you immediately got very different kinds of fickle people.
Mm.
And there's a couple of other questions. All of them have like a couple of questions. And then you get to a point in the game where you have a specific encounter where stuff plugs in. I mean, do you mind if I just tell one encounter?
Because
this is the example I've been using.
Please do. I've
decided, since we've got 20 encounters, it's worth burning one.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Just as an example, this is the falls one. So you reach this a forest, basically. So you enter this forest, you're going in, you're here for a reason. The birds are singing things which you used to whisper to your lovers. So, and you ask that, you know, you ask the player, okay, what did you tell? What sort of things did you say to your partner? And, you know, that's the bird song. There's nothing to eat here, though. It's kind of, you can't get sustenance here. So you get to the forest, and eventually in the middle of this classic fantasy forest, you find the question, yes, the fall. So where did you take your partners the first morning after? And so this diner or cafe is in the middle of the woods.
Mm-hmm.
It's covered in blood. The only place that isn't covered in blood is where the fall used to sit. So that's all set up. They go in. And at some point, you roll D6, and D6 X's come out the woods, like Nazgul X's used to people whose heart you broke.
The phrase and you get D6 X's come out of the woods.
I know,
is
it's
so
D, like, I wrote that, and it's like, Kieran, that's so dumb. You know what I mean? In the right, that's completely dire. It's both very, it's very heightened and real, but also very silly. So, and there's you get to define. So tell me about this person. Like, and what happens? They all just go for the fall. And if they manage to kill the fall kind of collapses, and then they are forced to relive, however, the first night of heartbreak after the fall left them. And you ask another player, not the fall, tell me about this person's first night.
Mm.
And they relive the whole thing, and then the X disappears, and then the remaining X's hunt the players for the rest of the game. So in other words, the fall is going to be forced to face the heartbreak of every single person they treat it badly. Yeah?
Nice.
And that's a classic, you know, I mean, that's a classic dice setup. You can run that. You can see it's run out the box. But it's very set, do this. But at the same time, it will change completely depending upon what the groups plug into it. And that's kind of what Hexcore was, Bazaar of Triangles was about. You know, can I make a set die adventure? And I think we have. I think it works. There's a few other things you plug in, but there's some stuff we cut. Like, there's definitely room to do a more classic Hexcore, because there were some things like random encounters I was including and some like environmental, like survival stuff. And it's like, no, we don't need that. It's enough to hear, just hit the die encounters.
Right.
And that's what I did. So yeah.
That is delightful.
It is really cool to think about. When I think of like modules, I immediately think of like D&D module, and you read it. And the first game I ever ran was Tomb of Annihilation, like a D&D module. And you'd read ahead and you'd see what's happening, whatever. But it was kind of, not a lot of it was personalized to the players, partially because I was very inexperienced, and partially because that's not what the manual wanted you to do. It's really cool to see module, like die scenarios and modules like that, taking so much of like the players into account. Like, there's so much, like, you know, two people will run that scenario the same way by the millions of branch points that come even from character creation. Again, I've gotten to the end of a sentence without a question.
No, it's like, for me, that was the thing. It's in how much can you keep the good stuff from die while still giving more guidance and make it a bit more simpler to run?
Mm.
You know, like, that was the art of writing these pre-gens for me. And of course, now that I've written one, other people can write them.
Yeah.
Right. You know what I mean? It's like, I kind of like, you sort of need to have the example so other people in the community like go, oh, I get it. I can do it like this, and you can see what I've done. Because that's how I work as a creator. I look at stuff and think, okay, how does this work? I mean, like, I did an adventure for Apocalypse Keys for their stretch goal, which will be out soon, I think, and they did an art. And that involved just sitting down and looking at, like, Ray's work and seeing what, you know, oh, this is how the adventures work. And then, like, and of course, you get it slightly wrong, because you end up, like, yeah, I deconstruct it, but I end up doing something a lot more open, a bit more Mass Effect 2-y than the classic smaller environment that Apocalypse Keys does. But that's still fun too. You know what I mean? It's examples are useful.
That was, I think, what when you were just going through the love triangles example, is I was struck by that, like, oh, this like feels like you've just given me this wonderful toolkit to make really specific die adventures. Like, I feel like reading this now, it's like, oh, I want to help people tell this specific kind of story, this specific kind of experience with die. And now I've seen that you can twist this game a little bit through these question changes, and like I feel like now, you know, like from a designer's perspective, like I would love to go and write my own questions and write my own like scenario. So that's very exciting. I love that. Rom-Com Drama Bomb is a three-player, GM-less, asymmetrical TTRPG about meet-cutes and mayhem. In this 90-minute timed game, you'll play as two people who shouldn't fall in love and the evil villain who will stop at nothing to make sure they do. Rom-Com Drama Bomb is now available. You can grab it digitally at moreblueberries.itch.io/romcom. Or you can grab a physical book, the pinkest book you've ever seen, at moreblueberries.shop/romcom. Check it out and happy rom-comming. Rom-comming? I don't know. Drama bombing?
Speak into the void. You never know who may be listening. In the Annie Award-winning Void 1680 AM, you take on the role of a late-night radio DJ. Use a standard poker deck and a six-sided die to build your playlist, interact with callers, and assemble a show that expresses something about why you love the music that you do. Void 1680 AM includes rules for single session and ongoing play, so you can develop the relationships of your DJ with your callers over time. You can even join the growing community of affiliate DJs whose shows are broadcast live on air and on YouTube. Shop Void 1680 AM now at bannerless.games/shop and take 20% off your order with promo code DUNGEON. Again, that's 20% off your order with promo code DUNGEON.
Persona Jones is definitely the hard part. That's the kind of like, it's not true, it's all hard. Like, that's the real kind of like, what is a good question?
Right.
And of course, there's so many games about questions. And the fact I've played a lot of them made me kind of like real intrigued. Okay, what's an interesting meaty die question? And it's always kind of like, and especially because the art is also narrowing the question. So, that full example doesn't specifically give you something that you need. But to choose another quick example, the character who leaves somebody. Specifically, you've left your partner for a reason. What is the reason? And they give some examples, and then there's or something else. But the or something else is a specific material thing you wanted, and that cuts it down. It's not like I left them because I was bored of a relationship. You left for a career. You left for something. It wants something physical because that character's the Neo, and it's all about So in other words, you've got to be very careful to like. I mean, it's really hard. I ran a Dungeon World quick start a few years ago. And the whole setup is basically you are trying to break your friends out of a dungeon, which they're trapped in, or you're in a dungeon, you're trying to escape in a city that's just become under attack by zombies. So the game is basically jailbreak in a city attacked by zombies. You know, it's great. And that's a really fun setup and it's a great starter adventure. Dungeon World starters tend to start with like five short questions and they sort of build. It's like, when did you first see the beanstalk coming out of your village or something like that. And one of their questions was, when did the zombies break into the city or something like that? And the player said, 40 years ago. and I was like, as a GM now, I would have said, do you mind? That's really funny and I love it. Can we exit? Because I think, because when the whole game turned from me doing a fairly simple, zombies are broken into a fantasy city, you've got to escape, easy to run, to I am now creating a world where zombies have lived in the city forever and play it, and the people have somehow, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I'm so now off the rails because the question didn't narrow it down enough.
Not great for a quick start, but a fantastic campaign.
Fantastic.
Campaign. Yeah.
I was panicking so blind. Panic's the wrong word. Like, panic, I know it's the right word, actually. But, like, it's a great setting. It was really memorable stuff. Yeah. But I was, like, deeply uncomfortable for the whole game.
You mentioned before that you've now built, like, a template and an example that other people can look at. I'm curious to hear, because you reached out to a bunch of other designers to write other scenarios within the Dice Scenarios releases, did you learn anything new about this game as, like, other people's scenarios started coming in, being like, this is how these people are interpreting, this is how this person's interpreting it, like, Has the game, like, in your mind evolved, or have you been surprised with what you've been getting back?
It's always interesting. The designers of the first one are Laurie O'Connell and Nathan Blades, who are designers. I love their stuff. Like, they're both really, really interesting designers. And I was more interested in sort of the guidance level in terms of, like, because people are kind of twisting it their own way. But I think what's most struck me about is what people choose to worry about. Like Nathan's Adventure is Pokemon based, or like collectible card based. You play people who are professional gamers in this collectible card game community, and they've been somehow talked into playing an RPG for once. Nathan's added a bunch of other mechanics, which is basically people get, you can use any collectible card game you like, and you give a few people cards and you use them throughout the game as well as your usual abilities, which is a big mechanical twist. You've got a big setting.
Oh, wild.
And I think Nathan kind of started on like the big weird mechanical twist. And then it was more like ways to funnel that. As in, we kind of specifically, okay, because in the actual main manual, there's something like, tarot dungeons is one of the things we throw. And this is a little bit tarot dungeony. And rather than like, that doesn't give you any advice on how to do it. What Nathan does is break down how to interpret collectible card game stuff, no matter what game it is. It's like, if it's a blue card, do it, interpret like this. Mm. So you work out a rule for the universe, essentially. And that's one of the things where like, they've come with the wild ideas and go for it. Whilst Laurie's game was, Laurie had a bunch of really interesting ideas. And and in the end, the one we kind of was most, we thought was best, but not true. They're all really good. But the one we thought best right now was actually the simplest. I think he wanted like a bigger idea, like a bigger meteor hook, as in like the collectible card what games. That's a big meaty hook. And this one is much tighter, which is about kids at a, it's like a kids for like, I've got the word, it's a camp for troubled kids, basically. Like parents will ship them off, and it's in the woods. And it's all about the kind of like these troubled kids with the fair, with their kind of storytelling fair in the woods. And that's kind of like classic die. And that's the weird thing is right now, it's like, it's almost like not the weird angles you kind of want. Like in some ways doing classic die is enough in terms of here's a really cool persona group with strong emotional needs. Here's a really cool way to make a dungeon go. You know what I mean? Cause the basic kind of, that's what I find interesting in terms, not quite true. I find it all interesting, but that kind of how people approach and find different ways to tell stories and different ways to evoke, especially because the dice stories have quite tight word counts. I mean, I think Laurie and Nathan have 3,000 words, and I said give me 5,000 because I knew I was writing more. But like, you know, there's a lot in there. But yeah, especially looking forward to the second one, which is a war game theme. It's gonna be really interesting to see what people do there as well.
Does that ask you to like bring minis into it?
I don't know. Actually, they haven't completely pitched the actual finished because it's October 15th, so we're heading towards the deadline. But it wouldn't surprise me if we did. I mean, I know I'm doing one. It's called Lovers of Battlefield. Like, I want to do a 2-player die game.
Oh, very fun.
That's my kind of. This is a bit more of a formalist one rather than the first one. As in, okay, how do you do a 2-player die game? That seems really interesting and intense. And I've got the idea of another failing relationship one, as in it's basically a couple who are in a terminal point in the relationship, basically arguing over whose fault it is. And the whole game is your generals to a battlefield. So you play out battles. Who didn't do the dishes? Or like, you know, whose fault, you know, and you obviously who does the dishes is not really about who does the dishes.
Right.
You know, so that's my kind of image of like doing that as a war game. But it's a war game really about the emotional battles. And as you retrace the history of these people's relationships. And of course, like any head-to-head game, that's going to be intense. So like, I'm really kind of still chewing over exactly how that will work.
Oh, I love it.
I'm excited to see that.
I feel like my head is spinning now with all these like fun variations and wanting to just like go write die variation, like die encounters.
It's fun.
It's awesome.
I recommend it.
Yeah. I think one of the things that was interesting about these scenarios for us was that you guys are releasing them in a subscription model, which feels very like classic comic-y to us. I wonder what the motivation was behind the subscription model and like what you're hoping for that model versus just releasing these like 4 times throughout the year.
This is roughly a question I think we better for like RRD to answer, as
for
in
sure.
They have the specific mechanics of it. And I generally sit back and act like a confused fool at this stuff. My understanding, at least, is that it's about reliable money flow. And it's kind of like, here is a thing. How do we know how many people want this? And then, like, you know, how much. And that allows you to sort of reliably plan for stuff going forward. That's the one strength of the direct market in terms of comics, is that you can sort of plan for the money. You know how much money will be there and therefore have to budget for a project. Especially because the kind of stuff like the scenarios is for like a smaller set of people than the big books always.
Right.
You know?
Right.
This is kind of like a specific hardcore. If we're talking about music terms, the people who buy the singles as opposed to the albums.
Yeah.
You know, and like in the history of rock and roll, there's a period where people bought the singles more than the albums, but we're not in that position anymore. So it's mainly that, I think. And also, like, there is something really appealing about the more regular smaller object thing. As you say, it feels comic booky.
Yeah.
And that's quite a nice vibe.
There is something really fun about having regular releases like that you can expect over the course of a year, because I keep seeing it as like the reason why a bunch of Netflix shows never get season twos is because everyone always goes and they're like, you know what? This show might get canceled. I'm going to wait till the end of season one to see if there is a season two to know if I should invest my time in season one. And it's like kind of it's a Ouroboros of like the snake eating its own tail. But like when you see a game like Die, it's like, this game looks great. Do I know there's going to be a community and like more stuff coming out? And all of a sudden you say, yeah, four times this year, we're releasing brand new modules and scenarios. It, for me, as like someone who would be like looking to get into a game, the second I see that, I'm like, great, this is like a game that is being cared for and is evolving and is going to be there and is going to be evolving for me to like continue playing, not just like once, though I may only do it once, but it gives me the hopes and the dreams of being able to play this many, many times.
No, you're great. I mean, you're right. I mean, there's a great quote by, I forgot the guy's name, Design the Sims. Oh my God, I've interviewed him several times back in my games journalist days. Anyway, him. But it's one of the things that, you know, you start playing a game when you pick up in the shelf. Like that, you start engaging a game in the fantasy life. So like, you know, that having more stuff and seeing it being cared for allows you to imagine games. I mean, I've bought every single Lord of the Rings RPG expansion for the One Ring, and I've never got it to table. And I do, and I love, you know, because I really like Lord of the Ring maps. And you're right, but at the same time, it's really nice seeing a game cared for and like allow it. And like, I mean, I found myself like, and occasionally there's a huge rush of stuff. I was finding myself looking at Morkborg stuff this morning, and it's like, oh no, you know, there's a community there because people are making stuff for it. You know, and you anywhere, and in some way, it's a statement of faith in that way. As in, oh no, 100%. We think people will carry on. We think people are interested in this and want to know more. So yeah, I agree with that entirely. And they're beautiful. Like I said, I've got the PDF of the first one here, and I'm sort of going through it, and it's just a really nice a sort of thing. And also, more Stephanie cover art. Oh. We have a guest. That's one of the things about adventures. We've got a guest art. Like Stephanie does the cover, but like there's a guest artist doing every issue to give each one a kind of its own coherence. Yeah, like Riot Bones is doing the first one.
Oh, nice.
Who is great? Yeah, it's got a real kind of almost Art Deco-y in their kind of approach. It's got a real kind of like stylized vibe.
There is something great to these like smaller additional supplements that like there are. I feel like there are some games I buy knowing that I might not even play them, but like, it's fun to just read them and imagine, or like to buy them kind of as art pieces, just to look at like, I love this world. I love the general vibe of Die. And now I get to pick up this new thing and kind of like see this slightly new twist on it, this new world, and like how this artist imagines it, how this designer imagines it. And I think that like, that's the reason why they're like, there are a couple of, you know, D&D modules on my shelf that I don't think I'll ever play, but I really enjoyed reading them and looking through them and like seeing a new twist on something I already liked.
I'm curious, Kieran, with beyond these Die scenarios, you said that there's hopes in the future for larger sort of hardcover supplements and things like that. What are sort of the pieces that you would like to explore in this game that are like bigger or more mechanical changes, or what are you looking to explore in sort of future supplements beyond the Die scenarios?
I think it's like they'll be quite far out. So it's that kind of like, I'm tentative to talk because it's one of these things where I've got areas I would like to explore, and I've got to do basically test stuff to see, does this even work? And if it doesn't, it's like, oh no, we won't do that. But there's some stuff that's almost vestigial in the main Die manual, which is stuff like we talk about realm stuff. Like there's a lot of, in Die campaign, there's the idea of like realm-based stuff. In other words, in this realm, the rules are different. And like they have different specials. You have different things come into play. Something like that. Something exploring Die's potential for having more genre-based tweaks. And like the custom moves. And as well as possibly a tighter look at some of the actual Die canon realms. As in like, here's Angria. Here's how you could run Angria. Something that's a bit like Angria.
Yeah.
Like that's the kind of area I'm interested in. But it's kind of one of the things that the Die rules. There's this mechanic called, if people who don't know, it's got a mechanic called specials. And basically, anytime you roll a 6+ on a dice, you can activate one special. And most players have a handful of specials, which are mainly combat orientated. So in some ways, if you're playing Die as is, there's not a huge amount of specials. So that mechanic doesn't happen as much outside of combat, you may think. But like, it was deliberately left open so you can add specials to anything. So you can do an encounter like, hey, in this encounter, if you get a, if I have a special, you can set fire to the room. Or anyone who gets a triple special can actually set fire to the room. You know, that kind of stuff. So you can textually create tools which can be activated by this currency that appears in the game.
Mm.
That. So in other words, there's a lot of room for mechanical building stuff there. To be honest, it's stuff I was writing for Dai, and then I reached a point when I first, Dai came along, so Kieran, you're writing at least the third supplement at this point. Like, start cutting. And it's right, this is stuff which just isn't ready yet. So that's the kind of areas we're exploring, but there's more, you know, there's definitely other stuff I would like to do. I mean, like, closer up is we're doing a quick start.
Nice.
The idea of, which should be happening at a similar time to the first Dai Adventures. And the idea is, like, let's cut Dai down to 32, 40 pages. Like, pre-gens, cut the rules cut down to the raw basics, persona gen, and a set, and another set scenario. Like, so it's kind of taking what I learned from writing Dai Bizarre Hex Lovers, Bizarre Hex Triangles, rather. That's not the right name. Bizarre Hex Lovers. We've had several names at various points, and kind of doing an actual pre-gen, sort of words. It's very similar to Dai, as in you go to a fantasy, Dai rituals, rather. So you go to a fantasy world, go to a, your teenage D&D RPG world, but it's got some set encounters as well. So, like, right, so in other words, you're not just immediately thrown into the pure improvisation which rituals uses. You've got some set encounters, and you get them by having slightly narrowed questions, which is really exciting. And it's come together quite well so far. We're in the position of, like, tweaking the adventure, like, making sure he actually is good enough. And actually, not good enough, tight enough. It's one of these balances that we want to make sure these encounters are a bit too broad. We need to tighten to a single encounter because at the moment they're more like settings. But like, as I hear, it's like a whole region's worth of encounter prompts. And I should rather than that give one much better encounter prompt, tighter, and then give like really boils down other things that could happen if you want to turn it into a longer session.
And kind of, I guess, taking a bunch of the stuff we've talked about today in terms of the scenarios and you know, these mechanical shifts and these more specific pre-generated adventures, I'm curious if there's this interesting thing with Dai where the comic and the game informed each other when you were writing those. And the comic obviously came out first and then the game came out. And now the game is out and you're going to sequels or like additional material for the game before diving back into the comic world. And I'm curious if like any of this journey with the game makes you want to jump back into Dai as a comic, and if it would, if that now the game would change how that would look versus the first time around and inform it.
Good question. No, it's definitely because I was developing them. I know obviously the game came out after the comic, and the game even in beta came out after the comic, but like I was working on both at the same time earlier. So they exist definitely at the same time at that point.
Right.
And I can't imagine that what I've done with the RPG won't influence what I've done with the comic. It's also my big fear's the wrong word, but stuff I would like to do in a sequel to the comic, I'm worried, am I actually just going to throw out the idea of an adventure? You know what I mean? Like, no, I need to save that one. I planned for it for a comic storyline. Because it's the thing about adventures is they motor through ideas. Like, RPGs are so idea hungry.
Yeah.
In a good way. Like, you know, you've got to really throw stuff down and generate lots of fantastic things quickly. So, yeah, I can't see it not influencing it.
Mm.
But you never know.
I'm interested to see what that looks like.
Yeah.
Kieran, I think we've been, a question that we've kind of found ourselves at in a bunch of these interviews recently that has yielded interesting answers every single time is, what are your, like, tastes within the tabletop role-playing space, or like within this kind of rough world, and like what are they now? Because I feel like every time I'm having an interview or playing a different game, my tastes are a little bit different. But like at this point in time, where are you currently? What are you most excited about in the space?
So I'm like I am promiscuous is the word I would use. I really like the broadest sort of level of play. I've ended up I had a kid like a year and a half ago, like nearly 2 years now. And obviously that cuts the time down enormously. So like my actual chance of playing at table recently has not been like huge. Significant. I'm still like, so all I'm playing regularly right now, I'm playing a Conan game, which is as a player. That's rare. And that's rare for me. I'm playing the 2D20 Conan game, which I'm enjoying in a kind of like, I wouldn't run anything that trad, but I'll certainly play it. Running it, it's a lot of work. There's a lot of stats in this game. So I'm joy, like there's something quite appealing there. The last thing I actually last night I ran a game of my own design. I did as a little miniature game I'm working on called How Do Aliens Do It, And it's about basically a group of like naive, innocent teenagers in an alien society trying to work out how sex works because no one refuses to tell them. And it's basically a Gen X, it's me, my Gen X hymn to the age before the internet when no one knew anything.
Mm.
And basically that kind of, do you know Brindlewood Bay?
Yeah.
Yeah, Brindlewood Bay, like the mystery mechanic. It basically uses the mystery mechanic from Brindlewood Bay to basically, and the mystery is how does sex work? So you generate clues as in, oh, I'm pretty sure it involves our tentacles. Or I'm pretty sure it involves our mouths. I'm pretty sure, I know it involves our ability to move things with our mind. And then you kind of theorize how sex could work, and then you roll dice. And it builds up to, as well as the mechanics, you talk about society, you talk about prejudice. So it's kind of one of those kind of games which is, it's very silly. You know, you're meant to laugh at it.
Right. Yeah.
But at the same time, it's approaching some serious stuff tangentially. You know, inevitably will touch on queerness. Right. It'll inevitably touch upon who is ostracized and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, that's like a really... Well, actually, I've got the cover. A friend of mine did the cover the other day. So it's like a really of a small game. But that was obviously a really straight story game. You know, that's... And I ran Royal Blood, Grant's game of like tarot cards being really annoyed at the Major Arcana, which was really fun to play. Last year, my favourite game was a Trophy Gold. I actually ran a Trophy Gold campaign, like 12 sessions, the whole thing. And that was exactly what I needed.
Mm.
Like, Trophy Gold was really, really kind of delightful. Delightful is probably not the right word, but just an absolutely... It was a game with some mechanical bite, but at the same time, also very story-orientated.
Mm.
You know, it's kind of like twitching those kind of different urges simultaneously. What else have I ran? I ran Hollows last year, which is... obviously, playing a lot of RRD stuff at the moment, it seems. Hollows, which is really interesting to see like indie kids trying to do D&D 4th edition, you know, that kind of like, yeah, you know, maybe they had a point. And that was really fun. I'm now thinking what I picked up at there's all manner of stuff, you know what I mean? Like, I kind of got a bunch, I've got an urge to kind of, I play on the open half gaming community quite regularly, or at least as regular as they can to. And I kind of were like, I want to put more games up there, even short form, quick things just to do it. And there's like playing a bunch of small zines I want to do. My friend's running a lot of Mothership. I want to run Teeth, which is my friend Jim Rosignol, his game, which is like a Blades of the Dark hack about basically Jane Austen meets Blackadder meets meets Stalker.
Mm.
So it's a kind of like sort of Edwardian era monster hunters of like grotesques. I dabble a lot, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Actually, I might be running Legacy, or I might be playing Legacy again, which is a game which is Mina's game from RRD, but it's like a behemoth of a game, and I'm fast. Do you know how it operates?
No.
Legacy is basically like, okay, the core Legacy, it's a post-apocalyptic game. You all basically play on two levels. So you make the world where you're the post-apocalypsing, and one of you, oh, I'm the bikers, I'm the warrior bikers, and I'm the marine people. No, I'm the alien tech civilization who's crashed in from another planet. So you're playing on a civilization level, making those kind of moves, but you also zoom in, and each of you play a hero of those people. And then you zoom out again. So it's the game basically moves on two scale, like the big kind of civilization level scale and close in and doing a post-apocalyptic game. I mean, also you kind of generate NPCs on the fly and on other people's factions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then you can move forward like 50, 100, 200 years to another era where see how these clans are doing later.
Oh,
that's fun.
Yeah.
That's
it's
cool.
Really cool. It's like, there's a bunch of really interesting hacks for it. There's one called Free from the Yoke, which is basically a kind of a Russian peasant kind of take on it.
Okay.
But like, and it's a Powered by the Apocalypse game. It's quite dense, and that can be quite overwhelming, like if especially with the two levels, but it's really powerful.
Mm.
It does stuff that no one else does. So like, I kind of want to go back to that again. But yeah, everything, like there's a lot, I mean, it's an awful answer. Everything is a bad answer, but like, I try to see what's interesting and dabble.
Yeah.
I feel like that's how I end up doing, like, I'll just pick up games and I'll read bits and I'll like you call little bits from everything that you either use in your games or in whatever work you're doing, or just like those are the bits that kind of make it into your brain and into your life, and it's fun to explore all the different little nooks and crannies of this community.
You mentioned Wonderhome. I want to get Wonderhome to the table, which I haven't yet. I finally bought the fancy edition when I was at Gen Con. I want to get run Starcrossed, which is really fun. I wrote something for Alex for that recently, which is fun.
Cool.
Oh, for the second edition?
Yeah. Maybe. I'm not sure if it's announced or whatever, but maybe.
We can cut it if not.
I think that the like tagline for Starcrossed is like the best tagline ever written. The for two people who want to but shouldn't. I was like, oh, just beautiful writing right there.
So good.
The one I've written is Basically, it's, do you know X-Men stuff?
Tangentially. I know like movies, but not comic level.
Sentinels, the big robot. Yeah, Sentinels, the big robots that hunt the X-Men, and X-Men are the X-Men. It's basically that. It's an X-Men falling in love with a Sentinel.
Mm.
So it's basically like, obviously, all the details are changed, but like robot mutant hunter killer and desperate mutant terrorist, like, you know, that, go. So that was really fun to write.
That's awesome.
Also, writing sad robots is absolutely my thing. It's a really sad robot.
I love a sad robot. Ever since, what's the robot in Hitchhiker's Guide? That's
Marvin.
Like the famous sad robot. Marvin.
Marvin, yeah.
Ever since reading Marvin, love a sad robot.
Like I mentioned, actually, there's a couple of things, like for the third Die Adventures, we're not sure if we'll do this, but at Dragon Meet, we're running a 36-player Die game, as I mentioned, I think.
Oh, yes.
And that's partially from the fact that, you know, Gen Con was great, but like I had a lot of, in fact, Grant as well, but like I had like a lot of people signing up for my games, up to the point where it's like, this seems unfair to only really get 5 people in or whatever. Like, if we want to have meet more people. So how do you run a 36-player game? So I've had this idea for a while, and basically it involves running 6 games simultaneously with 6 GMs, and me as a sort of NPC moving around the room.
Mm.
And I'm playing Kieran Gillen, but in quotation marks. So we'll do that Dragon Meet. If that works, we'll hopefully do it at Gen Con next year.
Oh, amazing.
And I'm doing a Fort Bubble, which is a British, it's the best British Comic Con. And I've got an idea for, they asked me to run a Die game on a panel, like a short hour and a half thing. And I was basically going to run Conquest, which is the classic, everyone plays imaginary comic book creators, and obviously run it with real comic book creators. But I want to run it as a panel.
Mm.
So in other words, the players get dragged into a panel and everyone in the room comes with us. And we're going to use the panel questions as the encounter prompts or something. So like, it's going to be a whole room of people probably voting whether to go home or not. That kind of performance arty kind of stuff.
That's fun.
This part of Die is so meta that we can get quite playful with it and see what happens. Because, you know, if you've got a stage, you should have some fun. We're finding out what's out there, I guess.
Oh, that's so exciting.
I got to be part of a 36-person Die game. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, that's great. Man, I'm trying not to... part of me wants to go back into the rabbit hole after hearing about those things, but I don't want to take too much of your time, but...
I know the thing about the 36-player game is that at the beginning it's got to be, we'll do all that player stuff, and I'll say, hi, I'm going to play Kieran Gillen, and I'm playing an asshole Kieran Gillen, clearly. So, like, obviously all boundaries will be respected, but be aware that I'm being the bad guy.
Right.
So, you know, I've got to be this. And the funny, if we actually write this encounter up, it'll be like, how do you make your own, how to roleplay asshole Kieran Gillen? Alternatively, how to replace asshole Kieran Gillen with, asshole Grant Howard. As in, you know, you just rest it with Grant, really.
There it is. Got back around.
Mic drop.
You got to close the loop.
Oh, incredible. Well, Kieran, our closing question that we ask everybody who comes on the show is, what would you like to bring to the table today? What are you bringing to the table? That can be a person, a game, a show, a resource. It can be within tabletop. It can be without tabletop. What would you recommend to the listeners right now?
Wow, talk about breaking my brain. I immediately went to the bear, weirdly, because I've become weirdly obsessed with food. I want to run, I'm thinking about food games and competitive food and all. Let's go from the bear. Let's actually go something that is better for the plug. There's a really good comic that Ram V and I forgot the name of the artist. It's called Rare Flavors, and it's basically mashing into...
I picked it up because of your newsletter.
It's mashing up classic Japanese cooking manga, but with Indian set horror. It's basically an Indian equivalent to a vampire who's predating on people and talking about their food. So it's like, it's very delicious. It's very rich. It's very powerful. So that's really delightful. Loving that.
Awesome. And we will link that in the show notes where people can find it. I love a food based story game.
It's got recipes in as well.
Yeah,
you know? It's good. Like, anyway, like second you couldn't explain how to do a recipe, I'm in. It's like, tasty.
Thank you, Kieran, so much for coming to the table. Do you want to let everyone know where they can find you online if they're looking for you?
Well, you find me Kieran Gillen. That's my name. KIERONGILLEN. Basically, everywhere is that. I'm on Instagram and like that. I'm on Blue Skies, which is why if you want to actually see me socially mediaized, that's probably where you'll find me if you get in. I'm abstractly on Twitter. I solely do PR tweets there now. As in, there's no real humanity there. There's a newsletter on Button Down. The newsletter is definitely the best way to stay. I'll write a load of nonsense and send it to your inbox. And there's a Die Discord, which is linked off the Die website. If you actually Google Die, you'll find resources on RRD, and the Discord's a great place to talk about Die.
And we'll have all those links in our show notes below. I also highly recommend the Die Discord. It's a very fun place.
And the newsletter.
And newsletter, yeah.
Hey.
And if you want more gaming content, you can check out our newsletter, the 20-sided newsletter, as well as our Discord, the Many-Sided Media Discord. Those are both also linked in the show notes below. Rate, review, and follow wherever you get your podcasts. And that's what the table is talking about. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
If you're looking for more great gaming content from everyone here at Many-Sided Media, you should consider subscribing to the 20-Sided Newsletter. It's a free, bi-monthly newsletter for people who love games, make games, and just love making games. To subscribe, just go to 20sidednewsletter.substack.com or follow the link in the show notes.